Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another wonderful show for you this week. I caught up with Ireland under 20 Grand Slam winning coach Richie Murphy to talk to him about his team's success in this year's championship. Will Slattery of the Irish Independent joined me too to talk about Ireland's Triple Crown victory last weekend in the men's rugby. In GAA, Declan Drake and Sean Lane analysed everything that's going on at the moment. And with Deirdre Smith in golf, we looked back on Seamus Power's progress so far through the World Match Play Championships, and also we spoke about Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadows and how they're doing in the LPGA Tour at the moment. So don't forget to download the podcast now wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. It's absolutely gorgeous here this morning. The weather's been brilliant all week. I was driving in there, down along by Sandy Mount there. The sun was just rising. The water was amazing. It was absolutely gorgeous.
You didn't bother getting in for a dip, no?
No, I was thinking about it. But I had to get in here, Ken. That's my excuse. I tell you, it was a hive of activity down there. There was people out jogging, cycling. There was people going in for a swim. The tide was a little bit out, but there's plenty down there. So we're a bit lazy. They're well able this hour of the morning. How's all with you?
I've been in Spain and it's been raining constantly for the last 3 days.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted for you. I'm sick of you coming on here. I'm in Spain today, Portugal. I'm delighted. Absolutely thrilled.
Yeah.
What about the snooker? Yeah. Jeez, they were disappointed during the week. That was
Lost 4-3 yesterday. I won the first match 4-0 and then lost 4-3. Didn't get a chance in the last, unfortunately. But it's a good tournament, though. I mean, Gibraltar, there's been a lot of pullouts, unfortunately, but there was still some big hitters here. Neil Robertson, Ronnie O'Sullivan lost yesterday. Judd Trump is still here, and they're all chasing the 150,000 bonus prize of the Bet Victor Series. It's only 4 tournaments, and this is the last one of it. So it's going to be interesting. There's still quite a few good players left, and it's the last day today. It'll be on Eurosport as well all day.
And who do you fancy?
I don't know. It's one of these tournaments that anybody could win. I mean, Judd Trump is one of the last couple of years, but it's time to turn our attention to golf now.
And I'm delighted to be joined once again by regular contributor Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
I don't know where it came from. I know it came from a tweet to Eurosport, but I said absolutely he isn't one of the snooker greats without a shadow of a doubt. For what he's achieved, he's won, he's come from Australia. I think he's the most successful overseas player of all time. He's won the World Championships, he's won the Masters, he's won the UK, he's won 22 ranking events, and he's won 3 tournaments this season alone, and I think that's what he's getting at, that there's not many other players. I mean, he's in the top top five, six maybe of players of all time who've won the most ranking tournament. So it's quite an achievement for an overseas player. I mean, when he first came over from Australia, he came over with 500 quid, got on the tour, fell off the tour, and then got back on the tour. And he's become one of the greats without a shadow of a doubt. And I think, I don't know what the question was all about, but without a doubt, I think he's one of the greats of all time.
No shadow of a doubt about that. It's funny because when you put all the listings there of the competitions and everything else, you can see where it's coming from. But absolutely, even media, we're talking about who might win at pre-tournament. He's not one of the names that automatically playing in. He's not kind of the World Tour event, second event there immediately. Ronnie always comes up, and the PGA between the two, and then he kind of
bit of a breakthrough in the Barbasol in July.
That he's, but like, you know, somewhat he's always there.
Maybe that's where it's coming from. But he's not sort of as recognised as maybe some of the others, you know, and that sort of probably irks him a little bit, you know. So he's probably putting himself out there to say, yeah, I am one of the greats. And even though the general public won't recognise me as one, you know, he's sort of listening off a lot of the stuff that he has won.
But
I think he is, you know, and I think he's going to be a big favourite going into the World Championships. Haven't Joe Trump this year. You know, Sullivan is still chasing the number seven World Championships. But I think Robertson, the way he's been playing this year, and Joe Trump, they're going to be favourites one and two, I think, you know.
It's just marvellous for him.
Okay, football. We've got that game tonight, the friendly tonight against Belgium.
Stephen Kenny, against Belgium. It's going to be a tough game, but it's going to be, I think it's a real test, isn't it, for Stephen Kenny? He's unbeaten in, I think, the last six matches now, which is great. They got that wonderful draw against Portugal. Very unlucky in the game against Portugal, where Ronaldo scored in the last minute. But since then, he's, you know, the team has sort of solidified their performances. And this is going to be a sort of a real acid test, I think, tonight against Belgium. You know, even though they don't have Bruyne,
let's hope that that's the case, because we're certainly wishing still, that for him. Okay, you mentioned Leona and indeed Stephanie, and both of those ladies are going really well in the JTBC Classic. Leona in particular, she's 5 under, just 6 off the lead, sitting there in around tied 9th position. And Stephanie's down around 20 and going well too. So a good start for both of them.
With 3 kids for a friendly against Belgium. So I said,
no, that's ridiculous.
17th in the world.
It hasn't gone about like that in snooker. It's quite cheap to get into. I like that bit in the dressing room with her singing Sweet Chariot.
I never expected England to beat France. I thought France were far too good a side for them. But England are kind of all over the place at the minute anyway. But wait and see.
Delighted for Seamus Power to get into the Masters. He was ranked, I was looking at his stats there, he was ranked 450 in the world there last year.
By the way, and he's got in now to the top 50, because Seamus Power has been in the background working away. We're giving him mentions here in the show on a weekly basis. But if it doesn't work one week for him, we've got the likes of Rory and all the other Shanes and all the rest of them to talk about. You know, when it doesn't work for Leona or Stephanie, even, but maybe Leona because she's been more to the forefront.
But then we don't have anybody else to turn our attention to. So means so much more pressure on her shoulders.
No,
he's well in with the show.
Are
they waiting now for Macedonia to get beaten to see if Italy qualify?
I think they're in danger of not qualifying now, Italy. It's remarkable, really.
No, they're in
young girl to
they are out. I think they're out. Yeah, they are out.
She's still only in her mid-20s.
Macedonia and then play Portugal in the final qualifier. So Portugal are playing Macedonia.
As always, dear, it's been great talking to you. Great catching up again. And glad we're back in golf season, so we'll be hearing more from you. And we'll chat to you again very soon.
Beating England in the final. They're not qualifying for the World Cup.
Deirdre Smith there, such a shame, our regular golf contributor. Boy, of course,
what was happening during
a very
week, was
accomplished golfer in her own right as well.
Win more and more games and details. And
we
can be very proud of where Irish golf is at the moment, because it's not just about the big names who we love so much. Obviously, we talk about Rory and Shane and all the others every single week, but we've more coming through as well with the likes of Seamus Power, of course, Leona leading the way alongside Stephanie Meadows for the women too. So the game is in good stead in this country. There's no doubt about it, and it's great. It's great to have it that way. I really do hope Seamus Power wins that match play. It'd be amazing to see him getting right down to the wire.
All right, what's up next for you, snooker wise?
The Tour Championship next week. It's all on ITV. I'm only talking, you know, I'm not playing. But yeah, that's a big one. And then, of course, the World Championships starts at the beginning of April.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, we'll catch up with you next week anyway. Looking forward to that chat.
Okay, Reg.
Mind yourself.
Have a good weekend.
And, I hope the weather clears up a bit for you.
Thanks.
Now, last weekend saw Ireland achieve another piece of history as the under-20s won the Grand Slam with success in course, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined on the line now by the winning coach of that team and fellow Brayman, Richie Murphy. Good morning, Richie. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Doing absolutely wonderful. You provided us all with some brilliant entertainment last week, getting that success across the line, beating Scotland, of course, and winning that Grand Slam. What a wonderful campaign. You must be absolutely delighted.
Absolutely delighted. The lads were incredible, and it was just a great few weeks. It's amazing how much they came on over the period, sort of from Christmas till now, and to finish it off the way we did was very satisfying.
Absolutely. And I mean, in the style that you did as well, I mean, the tries that were scored, the style of rugby that you guys were playing was off the charts at times. And I mean, you know, I suppose you got this team late-ish in the sense that you've just recently been appointed the 20s coach, so you had a lot of work to do with them, and I suppose in the warm-up games it mightn't have been going to plan, but you managed to get it together. What were they like to work with, these lads?
They were brilliant. They were like sponges, in fairness. Like, they really applied themselves really well. We picked them up last October. We had a camp in October and November. Obviously, we played Italy then, leading into Christmas, and we were well beaten at that stage. But like, even at that stage, we knew we were a little bit behind where we wanted to be due to COVID and everything else. But from that point on, really, the lads never looked back. And, you know, we had some very tough conversations with very young men about where they were at and how they were getting on. And it was amazing to see how they responded to that. And, you know, the one thing that I would say is, yeah, we definitely played some brilliant rugby, but these guys have become very tight, a very tight-knit group, and have really sort of enjoyed their experience.
And tell me, you know, along the way, you were 10-0 down, I think, to both France and England along the way in that campaign. And they're the two powerhouses, it has to be said. Even, you know, at senior level, at women's level, at every level, France and England are the two teams that you've got to watch out for. It's no different at 20s and to go 10-0 down against them. How did you manage to keep them focused and get them to believe that they could come from behind and get victories in those games?
That was probably the most satisfying thing in relation to how these guys prepared. We always talked about being sort of the moment in front of your face and being next moment focused. And it is something that's used in sport a lot. But these were probably one of the best teams that I've ever seen doing it. Because when they could beat you by 50, they beat you by 50. When they could beat you by 5, they beat you by 5. You know what I mean? They had a great way of staying in the game and going after teams. And obviously that the French game, 10-0 down, we actually scored a very legitimate try and the referee cancelled it off, which was disappointing. We got a penalty in just before coming in towards half time, and then we you know, they just fought their way back into it. And we had talked all week about what it was like to play rugby in the south of France and the atmosphere and the occasion and just making sure that they could stay on task. It was amazing. The lads said they couldn't hear themselves in the warm-up. The noise in Axtep, the Axtep for Provence was incredible. But, you know, towards the end of the game, they could see that the momentum was starting to swing. And the very satisfying thing was how they stayed in the moment and executed that maul, which led to Ben Brownlee going over near enough the posts. And even at that stage, I was a bit worried about poor Charlie Tector having to step up and kick the goal. Yeah. But in fairness, he was very cool all the way through.
Yeah, well, he surely was. That was not an easy thing to do. Very level-headed, fair play. At that age, to be that composed and have that weight on your shoulders, you know, it's really good going. And I wanted to ask you as well, I felt it was a very canny appointment by the IRFU. You know, all of the years of experience that you've had working with the senior team, you know, putting you in charge of the 20s, is there a lot of the learnings that you would have got from that senior team? Did you bring it right down to the 20s level and try and have the link between the two?
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, I have a good relationship with Andy Farrell. Mm. So keeping that connection strong and the other coaches up there is really good. We're very lucky this year to get someone like Jimmy Duffy coming in. Jimmy stepped away from Connacht last year. Another man with massive experience. Myself and Jimmy, we were like the two our lads on the Muppets sitting up in the box. but we've been together for... We had coached together at Ireland 18s probably 15 years ago. So you're talking about 15 years of experience, and I think the young lads really bought into the stuff that we were trying to do. We obviously had Willie Falloon and Mark Sexton in with us, who were the two younger coaches, but their contribution to the whole thing was immense as well. And you know, I couldn't have asked for three better assistants in that regard. But the experience, like, I was lucky enough to win a Grand Slam at senior level. I have a small part to play in that, and then obviously two Six Nations as well under Joe Schmidt. So all those experiences go into how you prepare a team, and also then the things that you're going to cross along the way.
Richie, we have to be and are, I know, the envy of other nations in the sense that we're able to produce squads like this, results like this, with what has to be said is a much smaller pool of players than the likes of England, the likes of France. We're probably on a par, or maybe better off than Wales or Scotland, but you know, they've got so much more resources in England and France. What makes it tick? How is it that we're able to be the best, as it turns out, and beat everybody else in a competition like this?
I'm not really sure, Reg, but I think the fact that we are a smaller nation probably means that we can get our hands on the players a little bit easier, and players are coming from, in relation to the 20s, are coming from five different areas. They're coming from the IQ program, so the Irish Qualified Abroad program, the Leicester, Munster and Connacht, obviously. So we're not picking from like 10 teams. So the philosophies within those clubs at age grade and development are similar. So that helps us build, I suppose, a more cohesive team more quickly. And it also means that we can get our hands on the players or get information to the players probably a little bit easier because I have a very good relationship with all the academies. And I suppose that their role within the under-20s program has to be acknowledged because they've done fantastic work with these guys. These guys, you normally get picked up at around 16, 17, and there's different ways you can come back in, you can come in and out of the program, but most of these guys will have had some sort of an involvement with their provinces from 16 years of age.
Yeah, and the school system as well, is how important is that to it all?
Yeah, well, the school system is massive, isn't it? Mm. The funny thing is, well, not the funny thing, the bad thing, I suppose, for these young lads is that obviously the last 2 years, Senior Cup and stuff like that has been cancelled. So a lot of these players didn't get the opportunity or got the opportunity when they were quite young to play for senior schools. But like that, the competition within that and learning how to win under pressure is obviously a massive part of any young player's development, no matter what sport they're playing in.
I know it's very difficult as a coach to pick out your favourites. It's like picking your favourite kid. But I mean, for the future, for our listeners, who are the players that we should be watching out for from this 20 squad that could go all the way?
Reg, you put me on the spot
there.
But it is.
it is quite difficult. But the guys that have really, I'd rather sort of say the guys that really stood up over the last few weeks are really come on and improved. Someone like Conor O'Tierney came from, I know he's a Michael's boy, but he's an under 19 at the moment. And how he's come on over the last couple of weeks has been incredible. Matthew Devine, his hunger, his willingness to play, he's really stepped up again, coming in from college, playing for Corinthians down there in, I think it's Division 2B or 2C. So, like, those guys, you know, Charlie, you know, Jack Boyle has been incredible in all those. So, like, you know, you can't really, it's very hard to single guys out because it's hard to know. The next sort of 12 months of development will be massive in relation to how we push these guys on and try and get them into senior squads, get them into their provincial teams. And then from there, it's really up to them, you know.
Well, Richie, it's an amazing achievement. Congratulations to you. Well done. You didn't have them long and you managed to make them champions. It's great credit to you as well and the great work that you've done coaching. We'll catch up with you again and good luck with everything and keep up the good work.
Cheers, Reg.
Okay, it's football now. I'm delighted to have joined me even on the line, Alan Cawley, the one and only from Cawley's Call. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. It's absolutely glorious outside and looking forward to getting outside into the sun for a little while today. But later on, of course, at 5 o'clock, I won't be there because I was given out earlier on about the price of the tickets. But it'll be a good game nonetheless against Belgium, 5 o'clock. Looking forward to that one. You must be as well.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I have a busy day myself, Reggie. I'm working at the women's under-17s. Oh, yeah. European Championship qualifiers are on at the moment, so their second game is out in Tala at 2 o'clock. They started the group with a 1-1 draw earlier in the week, so their second game is today. So I'm heading out to that, working at that, and then I'll be straight off to the Aviva, Reggie, to see the Belgium game. So I'm looking forward to the Belgium game, but I agree with you about the price of tickets. Now, I know it's a sellout and there's great interest in it, which is brilliant. And then the FEI might argue, look, if there's that kind of demand for tickets, of course, there may be want to cash in. But at the same time, you want to try and enhance young kids and whatever to the game as well. So it is great that it's a sellout. And of course, off the back of Stephen signing the new contract, and we've spoken about it a lot, there does seem to be a lot of support for him and stuff. And that's kind of ringing true with the ticket sales, particularly even when Tuesday night's game with Lithuania. I think there's 35,000 tickets sold as well. So, but I agree, they could have been a bit fair with the ticket prices.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for a friendly, I think they could have been anyway. But anyway, let's look at the selection. We have an abundance of goalkeepers, is the only way to describe it. Kelleher getting the nod tonight, and deservedly so, although, you know, it's about looking at everything that Stephen Kenny has, so he's weighing up all of his options.
Yeah, we're blessed in that department because, of course, Bazunu, who has come in, has been absolutely unbelievable, really, and continues to be even his club form, and he's going to be certainly a star of the future. We can all see that. But obviously, Kelleher playing at Liverpool as well, and we've seen every opportunity that he's got. Nothing fazes him. He's a very calm, assured young man. And I don't think this will phase him either, Reggie, you know. So I actually think Kelleher has the potential to go on to be a better keeper than Bazunu. And I don't really want to get into who's better and who's not at the moment, but the two of them are outstanding. But I just think everything I've seen with Kelleher, particularly at the level that he's playing at with Liverpool and the games and the high-level games that he's played in, and nothing seems to faze him. His mentality, really, and temperament is of the highest order for one so young. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him playing today. And I don't think it will faze him in the slightest. And we're very, very lucky in that department because, as I mentioned, Bazunu was outstanding. And even Mark Travers, you can throw into that argument as well. He's having a great season with Bournemouth. So we're very, very lucky in the goalkeeping department.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, like the last time we played Belgium, unfortunately, they hammered us 3-0. It was, of course, in the 2016 competition. We didn't want to get beaten the way that we did in the Euros. But that's the way it goes sometimes. You'd have to feel... They're still number one in the world, am I? Or in the competition? I mean, Belgium. Am I wrong in that ranking?
I think they're thereabouts, yeah. Anyway, Reggie.
So, like, it's going to be a tough one for us to get a result tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Now they've left the heavy hitters at home, so the ones who would have destroyed us that day in the Euros, Lukaku's not playing, and De Bruyne, a couple of those boys are at home. So, but you're still, they're still littered with kind of loads of quality players all over the place, and Tielemans from Leicester, the centre halves, Boyata and Donair as well. Very, very good players. So, look, they'll have a top quality squad, Reggie. It'll be tough. But I think Stephen Kenny will name a strong team. Even though it's two friendly games, I think he wants to keep the momentum going. Of obviously, we haven't conceded a goal now in 4.5 games. So they're little kind of trends that managers buy into, players buy into. They want to keep those little records going as long as possible. It's always good for squad morale as well. And I suppose the mindset of the players and particularly defenders, because they pride themselves on that kind of stuff. So I definitely think Stephen will go with a strong team and try and keep as much continuity in the team selection that we've seen in recent weeks. So I do think, as I say, Keller will obviously start, and I think we'll see a similar back four, back five to what we've seen with the likes of Coleman, Doherty on the wings maybe as wing backs, and you have Duffy and Egan as well in the midfield. I think you'll go with Cullen and Hendrick, and you'll see Robinson up front with Ogbenna as well, and maybe one other tri-parrot may get an opportunity. So I do think he'll name at least 8 or 9 of the regulars that we've seen in the recent games.
So like, he's going to be looking at a mixture of that experience then, to back up maybe a few new faces as well. I mean, Ogbenna has got a great following now, so you'd have to think that he's going to get in there alongside.
Yeah, he's become almost... Yeah. Then those two, as I say, it'll be those two out of three up top, with the formation that Stephen obviously plays with the three at the back and the wing backs. It'll be one as well alongside Cullen and Hendrick, I think, in the middle. And then obviously, the back five. I do think you go strong, because it's important, Reggie, that you build up those relationships. International football, there's huge gaps in between the games. So anytime you do meet up, and if you can get a team together where they're obviously all familiar with each other, and we've seen that in the recent games where they've done quite well. So I think he'll definitely go with a very strong team today. And even if he only makes one or two changes, I wouldn't be surprised. Whereas he has the game against Lithuania on Tuesday night, if he wants to give game time to some players, or as you said, some of those new boys, the likes of Conor Ronan, who's come into the squad, or Sykes from Oxford. I definitely think he'll use that opportunity on Tuesday to give those players game time.
Alan, you know, everybody's behind Stephen Kenny. We've had this from the beginning, this discussion, but it has been tough, you know, with results that have happened, and, you know, he's had to really dig deep. And again, the crowd are behind them. So what does success look like from this game tonight and even on Tuesday night? But like, what are you as a pundit looking for from this team? What would you like to see? Is it around patterns? Is it about a different style of play? What is it you're going to be watching for?
I'm just looking for a continuation of what we've seen, really, Reggie, and the more progression throughout each game and what we've seen, obviously off the back of the last campaign. So I mentioned about the clean sheets, and obviously that's a huge positive. I definitely think nobody could argue that we've seen a change in how we go about playing, and I suppose the approach we take to the games. Of course, it's going to be difficult against Belgium because of the quality that they possess, but I definitely think Stephen, no matter who he goes in against, has that mindset, and we've seen that obviously the game here against Portugal, the nil-all draw. No matter who we play against, he goes out with the belief that we can get a result and we can get a performance in taking the game to the opposition. So I don't think we'll see any difference in that. So I'm just looking for more of the same, more of a progression. And then, as I said, these are friendly games. Like, let's not forget that. So this is about building towards obviously the Nations League campaign starting in the summer, and then the qualification campaign after that as well, for the World Cup. So I definitely think things are going very well. I think it's a good news that Stephen has obviously signed a new contract. I think there was a bit of uncertainty around that. That wasn't good for Stephen. It wasn't good for the squad. We've all seen that the players like playing under him. Everybody speaks really well in terms of Stephen's coaching and his management and all that. All the players seem right behind him and are happy. So I think that uncertainty has gone now, and he can just get on with the job in hand, Reggie. Yeah. And these are the first games, obviously, of a new season as such. Yeah. The Nations League campaign is going to be big for us, and I think Stephen is going to focus a lot on that and focus heavy on that, because it's another doorway to qualification. So I definitely think I'm looking to see more of the same of what we've seen already.
Okay, excellent stuff. Quickly, I want to talk to you. Just this sort of passed me by, I'm sorry to say, because I'm more out of disbelief than anything else. But I was chatting to Ken this morning. I knew Italy had lost to North Macedonia, but for some reason I thought they had another game that they could just, you know, make it up and it'd be grand. But they're out. They're out of the world.
Yeah.
What's going on? I can't believe Italy, are out of the World Cup.
Yeah, it's incredible, Reggie. They should have got that little fullback that done the amazing run last week against Wales to play during the week, and they would have been fine in your sport. He was absolutely magnificent. He was. And it just just goes to show the highs and lows.
He looked like a footballer too. He wasn't quite the normal rugby build.
He did. That might be good for your game going forward, Reggie, that it gives hope to other little young slight lads like myself. But he was fantastic. But yeah, the huge story, of course, was Italy being knocked out. Who could have seen that coming, especially coming off the back of them winning the Euros? And they were brilliant in winning the Euros as well. And we all followed that closely. But it just goes to show that's the sport and that's football, Reggie. These things can happen. They dominated the game from start to finish, and it was a breakaway goal. But I think we should give a little bit of respect to North Macedonia as well. And I mentioned the Nations League games coming up there for Ireland. And so far in the last 2 or 3 years, I don't think we've embraced them games properly. But they actually are a really huge addition into the game, especially international football, because they count for so much. Mm. And you with North Macedonia, who were always seen as Minnows or the Faroes or San Marino, with the introduction of the Nations League, all those teams now were playing those games of against teams of a similar standard, winning games, which does unbelievable for their confidence and obviously improves them in terms of their ranking points as well. And that's what we've seen with North Macedonia, because all of a sudden they've started to win a few games at that level. They qualified for the Euros themselves, and here they are now beating Italy. So I think we should give them a little bit of respect as well. But in terms of them knocking Italy out, nobody could have seen that.
No, absolutely not. And you'd have to wonder. Mancini will be still there, will he? Or will they?
Well, that's the next thing. I think he could go. Like, it'd be sad to see him go off the back of that when you think of the success he had in the summer. But they're very unforgiving people over there. And you look at Spain as well, the abuse Gareth Bale was getting from their local press and media, which is scandalous. So it wouldn't surprise me if Mancini was to go, but it would be sad to see him leave, because I think Italy brought a lot to people's summer during the Euros.
Absolutely, absolutely. No question about it. Okay, tell me about the podcast. Who have you got this week?
Celebrity chef Gary O'Hanlon, Reggie. He's a big Finn Harps fan. So he's been on to us, and he's going to be Finn Harps' representative, he is. And we haven't had anyone from Finn Harps on the show yet, so Gary's going to come on. And he's a huge football fan as well, loves the football. So it'll be interesting to talk to him.
Oh, brilliant. That'll be good. Definitely one to tune into, no question. Yeah. He's a great chef.
He loves the football.
I love watching.
I might share a few chef tips with him, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You can. On the restaurant and things like that, I've enjoyed watching him on that. He's very good. All right, Alan, you go out and enjoy it, and good luck at the under-17s today. I hope that's a good game. Who are they playing, by the way?
They're playing Iceland today at 2 o'clock in Tala. Yeah.
Okay.
Tickets available as well for young kids to go along. So should be good, Reggie. They're a good team as well. Good team.
Time to turn our attention to rugby. I was just talking to Richie Murphy, the Grand Slam winning coach of the under-20s, but now I'm talking to Will Slattery, of course, of the Left Wing Podcast and the Irish Independent, about all things happening this week and a little look back to last week. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Absolutely glorious day. Had a great week of rugby last week. Plenty of enjoyment there. And it's continuing on this week, of course, with the women starting their campaign in the Grand Slam against Wales, which is one to look forward to at 4:45 this evening. Of course, that one is on Virgin Media One as well. So it's a new start, new coach. There's been lots and lots of controversy around the women's game and the way it's been dealt with and handled and reported. And coming out with information and withholding information. It's a bit of a minefield, but the rugby finally starts today, and Greg McWilliams, the new coach, hasn't been afraid to make a few changes.
Yeah, as you said, it's been a pretty crazy couple of months for the women's game here, and it is great to finally be able to get back out onto the pitch and start this new era. As you mentioned, Greg McWilliams' first game in charge. He, you know, was previously the attack coach during what was probably the most successful era in the history of the team when they won the Grand Slam and did well at the World Cup, getting to the semi-final. So it's hopefully a day to start his reign off with some positivity. As you mentioned, the weather's really good. He's picked an attacking team. He's brought in Aveen Riley to make her debut at scrum half. There's a new captain in Nicola Friday. He has kept Bavin Parsons in reserve on the bench. So he said it was the manager workload. She has been very busy in terms of 15s and 7s. So they will have that weapon to bring off the bench if they need her. But yeah, it's a really interesting day. Like, he's kind of kept faith with some players. He's brought in some new faces as well. Very important to get off to a winning start, I think, even though he was stressing in his first press conference this week that he's not worried about results. At the same time, Ireland are pretty heavily favoured. So to get off to a winning start and, you know, a glorious day and maybe some good rugby would really get the rain off, you know, up and running.
Well, interestingly enough, you know, people are expecting this to be a bit of a cakewalk for Ireland because they are such favourites. They are so strong. Wales were bottom of the table last year. There's no other way to put it. But what people may not know is that as a result of last season, the Welsh themselves, the Welsh Union, went through quite a bit of criticism, and they were sort of told to buck up a little bit as well. And what they did was they gave 12 professional contracts to the women and part-time contracts to some other women. So they'll be coming in a little bit different, this Welsh squad. Better conditioned, better resourced, and with a bit of a point to prove.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you mentioned, people mightn't be aware that, you know, as much as Ireland have gone up through like in a tumultuous period of upheaval, Wales, as you say, have done something similar, and then they ultimately arrived at making this kind of professional step. And it'll be a very interesting debate, I suppose, about, you know, watching this game, and say if Ireland do go on to win and play quite well, then people will be like, oh well, is that something we could do here? But, you know, from what you hear from some of the players, that I don't know how eager they are maybe to go professionally, giving up their usual career where they could be, you know, earning good money, to, you know, recently going to a professional salary to play rugby, but it could be quite a loan compared to what they might be making. So there's a whole host of different kind of factors to weigh up in terms of whether that would be the right move for Irish rugby. I think at this juncture it's not really been on the cards, but as you say, when you see today's performance and how they get on against Wales, who have gone professional, it will be interesting to see, do Wales look much better conditioned? Do they look a lot more well-drilled than they would have done this time last year? Because it's certainly a debate that's, you know, really interesting, but then also, you know, one that's been raging for quite a while, considering what's happened in the women's game. So, yeah, it's one of the many kind of subplots to today's game, and it actually is something that I'm actually interested to see how much a difference that has had on Wales over the last couple of months.
Okay, let's talk about the Irish team themselves. So the likes of Aveen Riley making the debut. They got Nicole Cronin there at 10. So decent enough back partnership there. Fill us in a little bit about that. What do you think of the prospects of those two lighting the stage up?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, like, the back line outside of that, you know, has, you know, a number of players who a lot of people will be familiar with. Stacey Flood, who played 10, you know, last year, kind of from the Sevens program, who made a really good impression, who's gone to 12. So you have that second playmaker in a back line, which can be very, very effective. The back three, you know, you have Amy Lee, Murphy Crowe, and one wing Lucy Mulhall, and the other, and Ema Constant, a full back. That's a very settled back three as well. But it is the half backs that is relatively inexperienced. Aveen Riley making her debut, Nicole Cronin coming in for the biggest game of her career so far. So I am that's for me the key part, because even the pack has a reasonably settled field with a couple of changes, but it's that halfback pairing that I'm really interested to see. Greg McWilliams spoke very highly of Aveen Riley in his press conference this week, you know, very confident she can make the step up. And I do feel like the performance of the 9 and the 10 will go a long way to deciding how Ireland go today, given the quality in the back line outside. And that's what I'm excited with the weather the way it is today. I feel like that back line, if they get some good ball, can really cut loose. And, you know, bringing Bavin Parsons off the bench, she destroyed Wales last year from the off. So if she comes in against some tired Welsh defenders in the second half, she could cause havoc again.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, you have to, you know, give Greg, I know Greg McWilliams well, and he knows what he's doing, and you give him the benefit of the doubt. But I do think there were a few eyebrows raised with the Bavin Parsons one, because she's just so exciting. I think it was nearly more disappointment for people than anything else. It wasn't a criticism. It's just like, she's so exciting when she gets the ball. Everybody just wants to see her get the ball in hand.
Yeah, definitely. Like, she is the kind of the bona fide superstar of this team that you can build. You can build around that, not even from an on-pitch, you know, perspective, but from the off-pitch thing, getting fans to the games. Like, when she goes off in some of these runs, it's like watching, like, John Lomu at the 95 World Cup sometimes. Like, people can't lay a finger on her. She's probably the one player in that team who, like, could just go into the England team and probably make a similarly big impact. And England are probably streets ahead of everybody else. But that's the potential and the excitement she has. So, I understand where you're coming from. It is disappointing for the first game of the new era, you know, to have her on the bench. You look to start with a bang. Yeah, Greg made his point about why he did that, but hopefully it doesn't come back to bite him.
Yeah, probably not. I think they'll be okay against Wales somehow or other. Okay, just a little reflection on last week. I was at the game, to be honest with you. It was a great occasion to win another Triple Crown, but it was a bit of a damn squib, the game itself. It was very flat in the stadium. Not the most exciting thing I've ever been at in my life, but it was great to get a Triple Crown under the belt. They're hard earned, and I suppose, leaving aside, you know, the performance against France, overall a decent campaign from Ireland.
Yeah, like going into it, my expectation was that, you know, 4 wins from 5, you know, 3 home wins and 1 of the 2 away scalps would represent a good championship from a results perspective and represent progress from a results perspective. And now that we've gotten to the end of it, though, you know, it was a good championship overall, but I just felt like they never gave that 80-minute performance, really. I think the first game against Wales was probably the closest they came to a start-to-finish performance. Even though they won, you know, 3 of their matches outside of that, it was kind of they play really well for 10-minute spells, get a couple of tries, and then they let the opposition back into it with some sloppy mistakes. And against France, that ultimately proved crucial. But then even against Scotland, like there was a lot of drop balls against Scotland, as there was in some of the other victories. So I think in some ways it's not a bad place to be. You win 4 out of 5, you get the triple crown, and there's still the sense that the team is only scratching the surface of its potential. Like I'm very excited to see what this summer tour to New Zealand is like. There'll be 2 midweek games as well, so it'll give Andy Farrell the opportunity to bring quite a large squad, so he'll have a lot of options. And I just feel like the team is building nicely. Like, if you look at the landscape of the Six Nations, Ireland, bar France, seem to be in by far the best position compared to some of their rivals. So I think after November, it was a step forward, but still, without giving that 80-minute performance, I think that still leaves a lot of room for improvement.
You mentioned the tours there. It's a lot of kind of chat around who he should bring and what he should try and do. And the obvious one is with the World Cup next year. Nobody, and myself included, knows whether or not Joey Carberry has been tested enough or is going to be the replacement 10 or where we stand with him, in all honesty, because we just saw none of them, really. Is it a case of play him for everything in New Zealand and have Johnny as a backup?
I don't think so. Johnny Sexton wouldn't the captain of the team. There's not a chance. Yeah, there's not a chance in hell he would allow that to happen. And I actually think he probably would. He has the clout to make sure that doesn't happen. But yeah, I certainly think that of those 3 tests, you have to start Joey Carberry in one of them. Now, that might be the second test after, you know, maybe. I just feel like you have to expose him to one of those cauldron-like atmospheres in New Zealand. I do think they should go with their strongest hand, certainly in Test 1, and try to lay down a marker because, you know, a win in New Zealand is like the last box other than that World Cup that Ireland have to tick as a rugby nation. So it would be massive to get a win down there. I would go with the strongest team possible, and that at the moment is Johnny Sexton playing it out half. But I do think it's definitely worth giving Joey Carberry one of those tests because that would be the biggest chance he would have to test himself against a team he could very well end up facing in the World Cup, depending on who's fit and what the form lines are. So I think it's an interesting balancing act. I think there's room to go with your strongest team, but then even within that, maybe make a couple of changes for the second test potentially and give a few key backup guys, you know, starting minutes against, you know, the best team or certainly the toughest test away from home in New Zealand.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way it unfolds. I suppose we'll just have to wait and see on that. And then just finally, you know, it's that time of year again. Six Nations is over. The squads are getting back together in the provinces. URC, it's kind of slipped under the radar a little bit. Maybe that says more about the competition than we'd like. But the big thing is the build-up again towards Heineken Cup. Are we still feeling confident about Leinster in that? Or which way do you think it's tilting?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, as you said, it's kind of been out of mind for a while. Like, Leinster have a really interesting fixture over the next while. So, you know, they play Connacht away tonight. Mm. Then they play Munster away. Then they have 2 games against Connacht. Then they go to South Africa for 2 weeks. And if you're presuming they'll get past Connacht, they go to South Africa for 2 weeks and then into a quarter final of the Champions Cup, which potentially could be away to Leicester if the form lines hold up.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a very tough couple of weeks fixture-wise, even how they manage that South African trip and tour. Do you leave everyone at home who might be involved in a potential quarter final? Then do you run the risk of potentially being undercooked coming back into that game? So it's a fascinating couple of weeks. I do still think they're the strongest team left in the tournament, but they're on a very difficult side of the draw. Like, obviously, Connacht first up, you would expect them to potentially get over that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, as I said, you could have Leicester away and then potentially a Toulouse or a Munster or an Exeter in a semi-final or even an Ulster. Like, so it's fascinating. I actually am really excited for the next couple of weeks of club action. As good as the Six Nations is and as much as it holds your attention, like, I think there's some mouth-watering games to look forward to. And this two-leg system in the last 16, when you have Munster, Exeter and Ulster, Toulouse, like, those games could be absolute crackers. So I think fans are in for a real good couple of weeks. And it even starts tonight with Connacht versus Leinster.
Yeah.
We might be a bit sick of the fixture by the end of the month, but or April. But at the moment, I think it's going to be a really good few weeks for club rugby.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Will, as always, an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Really enjoyed that, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Reggie.
It's time to turn our attention to golf now, and I'm delighted to be joined once again by our regular contributor, Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. Good to be back.
Great to have you back, no doubt about it. And great to have you back under such happy and positive circumstances around Irish golf. I'm going to start with Seamus Power because I'm just absolutely delighted. He's got himself into the top 50, a maiden Masters appearance, and he's still in the match play. He's absolutely flying at the moment.
Yeah, look, this is the kind of probably format that would suit Seamus. One-off sort of 18-hole shootout. It's very different to a normal tour event of four rounds where you have to mind every shot as if it was the most important shot in the bag. In stroke play or in match play, it's a little bit more, you know, you fire at everything and you know, you can have a bad hole and move on and it just seems to suit him. And he had two fantastic wins. I mean, he beat Sanjay Im at 26 in the world, and then to beat Cantlay, number four in the world, has to be a massive boost for his confidence. You know, going into this year, you know, when you think about it, this year he wasn't even in the top 200. You know, we've spoken about that before. You know, a little bit disappointing probably that he lost his last match, but that's on the cards. I mean, match play is very different to stroke play. Anybody can beat anybody, and that's the beauty of it. And to be honest, I fancy him today against Tyrrell Hatton. I think he'll get into the last eight, and then anything can happen. So it's so positive, and you know, he just seems to go from strength to strength, and we're all hoping he'll qualify for the Masters. But Seamus obviously has his sights on greater things, and you know, it's an unbelievable performance this week again from him, and you know, marvelous. I'm absolutely thrilled for him to think that he's in his first Masters.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think he could take Tyrrell Hatton. But it's interesting to think that, you know, this time last year, he was kind of playing in Korn Ferry Tour events, second leg events, we'll say, and the PGA between the two. And then he kind of made a bit of a breakthrough in the Barbasol in July. But, like, it's a pretty meteoric rise.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, to be honest. And I mean, we were sort of, as I said, hoping from week to week. But obviously, Seamus Power has his hopes set much higher than we've all expected from him. And you see, the other thing too is we're probably watching Lowry and McIlroy all the time. And sometimes, you know, to go under the radar and to just, you know, work away kind of diligently in the background without any expectations, you know, in golf, you know, you've just got to have no expectations. And maybe just he went from week to week, from shot to shot, from round to round, and that's how he's doing it. And it's a little bit like Leona in that regard. I know there's a little bit more pressure on her, but you know, it's just marvelous for him. He does put a lot of his success down to his caddy. You know, his new caddy from who's an Irish guy, and you know, it's just small things can make a huge difference in golf. And he's gone from strength to strength, and obviously his confidence is really high. And you know, McGinley talks about it all the time, momentum, and the momentum is definitely with Power. And you know, all the pundits are predicting that Power will beat Tyrrell Hatton today. And Tyrrell is a kind of a fiery character. He can start to throw clubs and balls into water and all sorts. So if Power gets under his skin, you know, and gets up on him early, I can see him really, you know, I can see him winning today.
Yeah, well, let's hope that that's the case, because we're certainly wishing that for him. Okay, you mentioned Leona and indeed Stephanie, and both of those ladies are going really well in the JTBC Classic. Leona in particular, she's 5 under, just 6 off the lead, sitting there in around tied 9th position, and Stephanie's down around 20th and going well too. So a good start for both of them.
Yeah, and you know, Leona is just continuing a good form from last year. She's up to 17th in the world. This time last year, she couldn't even get a spot in the US Open. So, I mean, you talk about a meteoric rise for Power. It's paralleled there by Leona. Marvellous. She's only 3 shots off second. So she had 69-70, and the leader is at 11 under, as she said. So it's a really good field. Many of the top players are in it competing, but you know, again, Leona just feels really comfortable, and you know, she's week in, week out, she's persistent. But I'm particularly pleased for Stephanie, because she's dropped down to 140 in the world ranking, so she really needs to have a good week and keep her card, because you know, you drop out of that top 100 in the women's golf, and really you're in no man's land. But like, if you think about Leona, she's 18th in the world. Like, she's gone ahead of Jessica Corda, she's gone ahead of Stacey Lewis, Jennifer Kupcho. I mean, it's just amazing, you know what I mean? And what's amazing is that she's had nobody before her. That's the big thing, you know what I mean? Obviously, Power has a lot of these guys to look up to, like the Harringtons and Clark and obviously McElroy and Lowry. But Leona's kind of doing it on her own, and that's so admirable. So, look, hopefully Stephanie can hang on to her coattails as well, and she can be inspired by Leona's performance. I think maybe last year she put a bit too much pressure on herself because she was already on the tour and Leona kind of maybe came in and upstaged her. And maybe she had to deal with a little bit of that in terms of the mental approach. And perhaps she's taken a little bit of pressure off herself. And I hope that this year will be a good year for her because she deserves it. You know, she's in there a long time and she's a really good player. So hopefully she can use Leona as a this year for a positive effect, which perhaps maybe she felt under her shadow last year. So I'm delighted to see that she's done well, and I'm hoping that will continue to improve this weekend.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, by the way, on that assessment, because Seamus Power has been in the background working away. We're giving him mentions here in the show on a weekly basis, but if it doesn't work one week for him, we've got the likes of Rory and all the other Shanes and all the rest of them to talk about, you know. But when it doesn't work for Leona or Stephanie even, but maybe Leona because she's been more to the forefront, well, then we don't have anybody else to turn her attention to. So it puts so much more pressure on her shoulders.
Yeah, and you know, she that's where she wants to be. And, yeah. And you know, she's had this from 11 years of age and she's had those expectations. And she you know, when she set out her sights to play, she wanted to play on the LPGA and that was her goal. And therefore, it's no surprise to her, you know, but it's a you know, it's a massive fillip for Irish ladies golf, for Irish golf in general. And, you know, she just seems to relish it. And she's very cool. You know, we all saw her in the Solheim Cup, how she played, how she handled all that pressure. And she just seems to be made for it. It's remarkable, really, for such a young girl to you know, she's still only in her mid-20s, you know. And, you know, it's wonderful. It's just fantastic.
Excellent stuff. Okay, as always, Deirdre, it's been great talking to you. Great catching up again. And glad we're back in golf season, so we'll be hearing more from you. And we'll chat to you again very soon.
Take care, Reggie. Thank you.
That's Deirdre Smith there, our regular golf contributor, and of course a very accomplished golfer in her own right as well, giving us all of those details. And I think we can be very proud of where Irish golf is at the moment, because it's not just about the big names who we love so much. Obviously, we talk about Rory and Shane and all the others every single week, but we've more coming through as well with the likes of Seamus Power and, of course, Leona leading the way alongside Stephanie Meadows for the women too. So the game is in good stead in this country. There's no doubt about it, and it's great. It's great to have it that way. I really do hope Seamus Power wins that match play. It'd be amazing to see him getting right down to the wire on it.
GAA with Declan Drake.
Thank you, Reg. Yeah, Super Sunday in the Allianz National Football League Division 1 tomorrow, with Survival the name of the game for Dublin, who head to Clonus for their final round clash with Monaghan. The Blues backed up their away win to All-Ireland champions Tyrone with a Croke Park success over another Ulster side, Donegal, last Sunday to move on to 4 points from 6 games. There were more encouraging signs from the team in the Donegal win, a greater cohesion to parts of the game. The return to the starting lineup of Ballymun Kickham's clubman James McCarthy, that was a major plus, as indeed was the performance of Raheny's Brian Howard, amongst others. He kicked 3 points from play. So, with so many permutations on the day, the 70 minutes of football from 1:45 all over Division 1 tomorrow will be keenly watched for the twists and turns that can be expected. Staying with football and moving down to the minor grade, the county's minors opened their Leinster Championship campaign last Saturday with a big win over Louth. 5-14-1-1 is how it finished up there. Meanwhile, ladies football, not such good news there last week. Dublin's reign as Lidl National Football League Division 1 champions is over. Mick Bowen's Chargers conceding 2 very late goals from a commanding position against Donegal to lose out 2-8-1-10 in Clonus in their last 4 clash. The Blues' attentions, they now turn to the upcoming return of the TG Carr Leinster Championship after a couple of years' absence from the calendar. Turn our attention now to the small ball game. And before we discuss hurling with our regular analyst, Sean Lane, time to look back at Camogie. And the Dublin senior team had a great Croke Park victory over Down in their final Littlewoods National League game last Sunday afternoon. 10-point victors at the end, 113 to 6 points. They finished their group with 2 wins from their games. So well done to them on a great performance in Croke Park last Sunday. First of all, Sean, it was great to see them playing in Croke Park.
Yeah, absolutely. And it had been 11 years since they played Declan, which is quite a long time for a team, you know, Dublin team not playing in Croke Park. But no, really, a campaign, they won 2 and lost 2. I suppose it would be very disappointing the manner the way they lost to Galway. But the encouraging piece I would take out of it, one, they're a very young side. But secondly, they gave Tipperary a very, very good run. And Tipperary would be regarded as about the 4 team. So a little bit more work, maybe more support from the crowd as well here in the capital. And, you know, I think they can slip into the top 4.
To hurling now, and last Sunday saw the completion of Dublin's Alliance National Hurling League Division 1B campaign. Wearing the new alternative shirt for the afternoon, Matty Kenny's side were 231 to 124 winners over Leash to finish their league season with 3 wins from 5 starts. They drew with Waterford and suffered their only reversal to Kilkenny. They finished on 7 points, but were edged out for a top 2 slot by the Daisha on points difference. A downside of the day was the loss of Rean McBride through a straight red card. Our regular hurling analyst Sean Lane remains in studio with us. Firstly, Sean, can we get your assessment of the league season overall from a Dublin perspective and indeed how it finished for them as well?
Limerick have gone back a little bit. They may get it right. So from a half-time perspective, I know from capital people in Hurling that the Kilkenny performance in Croke Park will stick in people's gut. But I actually think that's a good thing. Matty knows he's a good few things just from that game to get right. So, but no, you'd have to take the 5 games. I mean, let's not, you know, Kilkenny lost to Tipperary, so they can't be 100% happy. Cork lost the last game to Wexford. Waterford, having, you know, gone a great league campaign, turned up in Nolan Park, or you could say they didn't turn up in Nolan Park. So I think everybody has a blip on their team. Galway on the other side as well, but a great Limerick team down in Limerick, and the following week they came home to Salt Hill and got beaten by Wexford. So everybody has a blip. I think between the Keogh or the Walsh Cup and the National League, we've had a good 9 or 10 games, and I'd be very happy with where Matty is.
It's remarkable when you look at the Walsh Cup as well. We saw both of us witnessed it at Croke Park, the comfortable victory that Dublin had over Wexford. And looking at them that night, you wouldn't have put them qualifying for a league semi-final just a couple of months later. But that's exactly where they find themselves.
I don't put most matches on the last game they had against Cork. I don't think Cork were trying. They were both through. But Wexford, after beating Galway, they're after beating Limerick. They've had some really, really good performances. And I mean, the standout performance of the whole National League has been this Rory O'Connor lad. I mean, he's playing out of his skin and comes from a good pedigree, but he's burning the whole field in front of him up.
Yeah, and of course no Lee Chin yet either, who would be an inspirational kind of figure for them as well over the years.
Yeah, and add in Conor McDonald, but you're right about Lee Chin. If they get Lee Chin and Rory and Conor McDonald flying, and I think we said this 12 months ago on the show, they'll be very hard to hold. You know, they are the farm team in between the two leagues. They're the only unbeaten team, 10 points out of 10. But let's see how the championship fares out.
Yeah, middle of April, it starts from a Dublin perspective. It's back to the round robin this year after the break from through to COVID and straightforward to the knockout championship and that in 2020 and 21. But a lot of players used, some players used in positions that were not used to seeing them, other players still to come back into the fold as well, of course, like Liam Rush in particular, just to mention one player. The makeup of a championship team, can you see it taking shape? Will there be much change, do you think, Sean, from what we've seen in the last couple of games to what may be lining out against Leash, all things being equal with injuries and suspensions included?
You know, people keep saying Limerick's bench won the last 2 All-Irelands, and when you factor that in, it means you to start with 20, you know, really good players, plus with the round robins in Leinster is run over 6 different weekends, but there's 5 games, so you're now going to need 22 or 3 players rather than the 16 or 17. I think Matty's still a player or 2, maybe 3 short at best, But he has, you know, accumulated a very, very good panel. And you mentioned about Liam Rush coming back, but there's also Darragh Gray has to come back, and so is Keane Boland, and they're all pretty good. You'd have to be encouraged by the form of Trollier as well. And, you know, I mean, he's played Paul Crummy, particularly in the game up in Antrim, and came in with a great goal. So we're nearly there in the numbers of 22 and 23, and I think Matty will be happy with that.
So how does it work then for the next few weeks? They would have appreciated, I'm sure, the extra game that a league semi-final would have given them this weekend. But as you say, they've fallen just fractionally short of that against Waterford. So is it a little bit of time off now to regroup before you come back and then start the serious plotting for championship?
Yeah, I think, you know, with 4 or 5 weeks to go, Dublin should certainly take a week off or 10 days off. And if you compare that to Kilkenny, well, we'll just mention Kilkenny. Kilkenny started off the league very, very slowly. They only beat Antrim a couple of points down in Nolan Park. But they're now, after going and having a great game against Tip, they're just beaten by a free the last game. Gave Dublin an almighty beating in Parnell Park. Gave Waterford a good beating in Nolan Park. They have a league semi-final against Cork. They may have a league final. They're going to be fairly well prepared for the first and second matches in the competition. So I would have loved if we had qualified, Declan, and had one more big game, particularly just to get that Kilkenny game in Parnell Park out of our system.
Yeah, it's plenty to look forward to over the next few weeks in that respect. All right. The sending off of Rian McBride, that was a real downer on the overall performance last Sunday.
Before. I had Rian myself on a development squad a couple of years ago. He was same age as Con O'Callaghan, and lovely, lovely young lad, comes from a lovely family. They all went to Kilosh to own, I think, and you know, a small bit out of character. I had a look at it, and you know, and Reggie'd probably be listening to this, but I mean, in Reggie's game, that you do have to take care and attention when putting an individual to the ground, and I think he let himself down, and he'll know that himself.
This hurling league, though, Sean, it seems, hasn't captured the imagination of the public the same way that the football hurling. What's your take on that?
I talk about this very often. I still think if you take Leinster, and I'm not being unfair to Westmeath here, and I'm not being unfair to Laois. I think it's great to see the two of them in the Leinster Championship. I would be more favourable to them. I would give them all home games in the Championship, bar when they play one another. But in Leinster, you know, there's four teams can win the Leinster Championship. You have Dublin, you have Wexford, you have Kilkenny, and you have Galway. Go into Munster and obviously leave out Kerry. You have Waterford, you have Clare, you have Limerick, you have Cork, and you have Tip. So you have nine teams in hurling can win the All-Ireland. In football, let's be honest, Dublin have a good chance now, I think, of winning it. I think Mayo and Galway are an outside bet on that. I think Cork have gone way back. You have Kerry there. And we'd have to say Donegal are gone back as well. So is there only four teams in football can win the All-Ireland, where eight or nine could win it in hurling? Of course the National League games in football then are going to be far more important, because people won't want to be relegated. Where in the hurling, it's not as easy to get relegated, and you're building all the time for a championship. And plus, I think the system we have in hurling is fantastic. To know that Dublin have five hurling league games in 6 weeks, where all the young kids, boys and girls, can go and watch them. Back in our day, Declan, you might be beaten by Wexford in the first round of the championship the middle of May, and that was the hurling over.
Yeah, but the point about it is that you had in the championship, as you say, one match previously, and now you've got four or five of them. And the league of old was always taken as a stepping stone for championship, you know, trying different systems, trying different players, particularly new players. Mm. But if you look at the attitude of some of the top tier teams this year, Tipperary, Limerick especially, the All-Ireland champions, they didn't put too much importance on it at all. What do you think of that particular line of tactic?
Yeah, it's a great question, because there definitely is a shift in thinking there. But I suppose Limerick are saying to themselves, look, we know we've a team that can win this All-Ireland. Let's not be running them all over the place in November, December, and January and February. They need to hit the ground running on the first week of April, or the 15th or 16th of April, that weekend. And be absolutely clear, Limerick will be flying that weekend, whether Cork will have too much done or whatever, or maybe small bit burnt out. But there's definitely, there's one other factor. Going back in the National League, Declan, there used to be eight eight in Division 1 in the hurling. There's now only two sixes. So you can get relegated a little bit easier in hurling now, unless you're one of the bottom teams that will probably go down. So they can play away these matches. I just think there's the fact that the championship was played 4 or 5 weeks earlier than it used to be, the fact that it's round robin, I think teams are really minding their top players, making sure they're right for the 5 championship games.
We must finish up with our minor hurlers. They opened their Leinster championship campaign this afternoon in Parnell Park against Wexford, a contest that throws in at 2 o'clock. The minor footballers very impressive last week in their victory over Louth. What do you know of the hurlers? I know that you've volunteered St John's, your own club, are represented in the panel.
Yeah, well, firstly, to the minor footballers, they were awesome last week. They beat Louth, I think, 5-14 to a goal and a point, and Louth scored the first goal. I don't expect to see that in Parnell Park later on. But, yeah, we've a great young lad, Dylan Bannon, playing for us, for Ballantyre. He's full-back on the team. I've seen them playing a few games with a good side. Shiner Brennan's young lad is up front. Young Lewis of Foggs is middle of the park. So we actually have a good side. We've played Cork twice. We've played Leash recently. We've also played Waterford. We're putting up very, very high scores. I won't go into the way they play. Let Wexford find that out on Saturday. But they're a good little side. They're very, very committed. They're well managed, Collie Marr and that. And I wish them the very best of luck this afternoon.
Yeah, we can't say too much because, of course, Sunshine 106.8 is known to transcend the county boundary of Dublin into Wicklow and indeed Wexford as well. And we certainly wouldn't want to be giving them any insight into our minors. But we wish them every success this afternoon, as we did the footballers last week as well. Sean, thank you very much indeed for your time. I'm sure that you're looking forward to watching the two semi-finals of the National League over the course of the weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Declan.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.